Fred Film Radio, Venice Film Festival, Italy.
Fred Film Radio, I'm Matt Micucci from Venezia 74, and I'm very pleased to be joined by Nathan Silver, who is presenting his new film, Thirst Street. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So the first question is kind of the obligatory question. Would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about the movie?
Absolutely. So it's the story of a flight attendant who, her boyfriend commits suicide, and then she's on a layover, she goes back to her job, she returns to work, and she's grieving, and she, on a layover in Paris, she falls in love with the bartender, and he doesn't necessarily have, you know, the same feelings for her, but he allows her to, he kind of keeps her in his life to have sex with her, and not realizing that he's encouraging her to fall for him. And it's this story of, like, unrequited amour fou, kind of.
Dark side of love.
The dark side of love.
Yeah, that's it. I guess also love and addiction. So I noticed that, like, when she falls in love, and it almost works like an addiction on her.
Oh, absolutely. And it's also a disease. It starts with conjunctivitis. He has conjunctivitis. He then gives it to her.
That's like, right. Yeah. And why? Why does this interest you?
Because I think that, you know, I think a lot about love. I obsess about it. Romantic love in particular, I think it's such a difficult, fascinating thing that has obsessed people from, you know, the beginning of literature. It's just, it's everything. It says so much about humans. It's so difficult to love another person. And I just started thinking about my obsession to make movies, my love for movies, and how delusional I am. And
right.
I started thinking about what that would mean for a person to have these delusions about another human instead of just movies. Like I feel like I'm a maniac for movies, and she's a maniac for
Well, that's interesting, because I believe the main character says at one point, like when she talks about being an air hostess, she's like, well, I don't know how to do anything else at this point.
Exactly.
Do you ever feel like that? It felt like a very personal line for some reason.
Yeah, I absolutely feel that way, and I think it's kind of, you know, at this point in my life, I'm 34, I'm broke, I've been traveling for, you know, the last few years with movies, but which is a real pleasure, but also you don't set up a home, you
right.
know. For a while, I would be home, like, I would be traveling, like, 9 months out of the year, you know?
Yeah.
And so it gets very strange, and you wonder what the hell you're doing it for.
Yeah. Oh, but, I'm sure. Yeah. So there is kind of like, you know, the lead character in this film, there's definitely autobiographical elements in it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And also, shooting in France, what was that like?
It was fantastic. You know, I think this shoot was by far the most fun I've had on set. It was just a real pleasure, you know, because there were very few Americans there. I mean, on the set, it was, you know, me, Lindsay, and our cinematographer Sean and Keith, and then, you know, some of the producers would come just for a bit of time, but it was mostly us and then the French, and we just had this, like, it was a real little paradise we had, and it was before Trump. So it was kind of, you know, this lovely time. And then we finished editing in France the day of the election.
Oh, really? Tell me about that.
That was hell. I was catatonic when I went for the last day of the edit in Paris.
Oh,
I was just like, oy.
But there you go. The setting of the bar is spectacular.
Yeah, it was a real coup. You know, our French producers managed to get us into that place, and I was... It's called the Castel, and it was big in the 60s and 70s. They have Serge Gainsbourg's piano in the basement, and it's really an amazing place. On the rug, there are vaginas down. It's a design of vaginas downstairs. Upstairs is penises. It's like very, very strange. And
very psychoanalytical.
Yeah, I know.
Design.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of the style, I noticed references to classical film. So you do play with that side of romanticism as well in movies.
Oh, absolutely. The main character is obsessed with, like, she wants, you know, a romance out of the musicals she watched when she was younger.
Yeah.
And I am returning to what I once, you know, it's visually it's different than my previous films, and I wanted, you know, I first fell in love with movies. I fell in love with melodramas. I fell in love with Fassbinder and Douglas Sirk and you know, Nicholas Ray and Max Ophuls, and I wanted to make something more lush and to return to, like, the mad lighting, and realizing that I can play again. I feel like I don't have to, you know, be naturalism. I'm starting to move away from, and going back to scripts, this one wasn't scripted. It was the structure was, but not the dialogue.
Oh, the dialogue wasn't scripted.
No.
But the structure was.
Yes.
So there is some sort of a linear kind of structure that you're following.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so a 25-page treatment.
Oh, well, yeah. 25 pages.
Yeah.
But so what was it like then to work with the actors? Well, first of all, they're great. How did you cast them?
Well,
about the casting process?
It was written for Lindsay. So
was,
there was,
yeah.
Yeah, there was no question, because I had just worked with her on a movie called Dr. Martinez, and I love her. I think she's, you know, brilliant. And so when I got back from shooting Dr. Martinez, I told my friend and co-writer, Chris, that I wanted to... I wanted to write something where she would be the lead, and he had actually written a script for her a few years prior where she goes to Paris, but he had never finished it. He had started it, and so then the idea of her in Paris, that kind of clicked in my brain, because I lived there and I've been wanting to work there. I have all these French friends, and so it started with that. And then when I pitched it to the French producers I know, they took over casting, and then they introduced me to Damien, who plays Jerome, and he had just shot Guy Rodi's movie. And everyone was saying that it was going to get into Cannes and all this stuff. I was like, oh, cool. But then I met him, and he was just... As soon as I met him, I just felt something. Like, I loved his face. There was just something about him. He looked like a character that... like a guy Buñuel would have cast if he were still alive. And so, like, I just was like, this is the man. And then... And Lola, I knew I wanted Lola Bassis because I had talked to, like, she was on from the beginning. And Lola and Damien, they know a lot of people in the acting, you know, in a lot of actors in France. And so they just helped fill out the cast. And it was actually Damien's friend, Isabelle Ongaro, who has cast for, like, Bonello and other people. And she got us, you know, Jacques Nolot. And Francois Lebrun, like all these heroes of mine, and I was just like, this is insane to work with Jacques Nolot, who I love as a director and also an actor. I mean, I think he's just magnificent. So it was kind of it was a real coup. And then Esther Garel came about through Lola and Ruben. Ruben's the producer on it, and I adore her. I just think, and I just made another thing with her in June, and
right.
She's one of my favorite actresses now.
Yeah, that's right, because you were telling me before the interview that you've already got another film coming.
Yeah, it's something that we shot in June, and it's actually, I brought French people over to New York.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of the inverse.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's very real cultural experience.
Yeah, yeah. It's oddly, it's autobiographical to a degree, but also it's like the autobiography of three different people. It's very strange. It combines like my obsessions. I didn't write it.
Yeah,
I just came up with the story, and then Jack, who I've been working with a lot, Jack Dunphy, wrote it, and so it's like it combines his brain, my brain, and then this old friend of mine, her like her life, and I just all these things like came together, and it's this very strange beast.
Right. Well, what's it called?
It's called The Great Pretender.
The Great Pretender. So just a final question to wrap things up. It's a very banal question that I'm ending with, which is silly. But Thirst Street,
yes.
What's the meaning of the title?
So Chris and I, we had an idea for another movie about... Like, when I was 15, I went to study in France for a year.
Yeah.
And in this town, Rennes, in Brittany, and there's a street there called Rue de la Soif, which translates to Thirst Street.
Oh, right.
And so we wanted to do a movie about like an exchange student and call it that. But then we decided, wait, we should just call this movie that. And it brings up no one can pronounce it, but it looks good on the screen. And the French have a lot of trouble saying it. It's like watching a cat like drink seltzer. Like it just, like they can't handle Thirst Street. So it's kind of funny to shoot a movie like that in France where no one could pronounce it. And then in America, everyone thinks I'm saying Third Street or First Street.
Wow.
So it's kind of a great title because no one can pronounce it.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us. It's a great pleasure talking to you
once again.
We'll meet again. You'll talk about the next film then, hopefully.
Absolutely.
Somewhere
yeah.
around the world.
I love it.
Great pleasure. Thanks very much. And this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio. 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.